Hi, this is Bob Papa, voice of the New York Football Giants, and this is the Big Blue UK and Ireland podcast.
I'm on mute. There we go. I'm off mute now. Welcome back, Giants fans, to the latest edition of the Big Blue UK and Ireland podcast. As always, proudly in association with Andy's Man Club, lads. It's okay to talk. At this time, we are 100% British, but absolutely, as always, still 100% Giants. Kev's busy working, so I'm joined by Shane and producer Craig as we continue to look at this year's top prospects in the draft, focusing on the big guys up front on defense this week, the D line and edge being the topic of conversation. That's how we're doing.
Yeah, not too bad. I just confirm, like, it is Dan that's here for 2 weeks in a row. Yeah, we've got that. We just want to make sure, like, yep. I just don't want to feel like I'm imagining
it's not an imposter. It's me.
all good. Obviously, draft season picking up quite a lot. You know, a lot of college players are having their pro days, either had them, having them, or are due to have them over the coming days as well. So, you know, the draft content here is not going to be easing up anytime soon. And if anything, it's going to get more intense over the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's onto the defensive side of the football on what are mine and Dan's favourite episodes of finding out players that we know absolutely nothing about, which is always good. And we get to share it with all of the viewers and listeners at the same time, so we're just as shocked as you are to hear some of the names and some of the numbers. So yeah, looking forward to this one.
It should be good. I enjoy talking defense at the best of times, so yeah, I'm looking forward to this one as well as you are, Craig. And obviously, as promised last week, we'll be revealing our draft night plans, or some of them anyway, later on this evening, so make sure you stay tuned for that. And yes, yours truly, this mug right here, was on a certain German Giants video that was launched yesterday, day before?
A couple of days ago.
Day before yesterday, wasn't it? Yeah. So yeah, famous right here. And Steve, intern host. What are you talking about? No, it's good. It's just good to be back. I've had a pretty rubbish day, so it's been looking forward to this all day. So yeah, should be a good one. As usual, let us know your comments. Let us know your thoughts. Feel free to throw us some questions as well, and we'll do our best to answer them. And you can check out all of our social media platforms and our merch store. Follow the links in the description and give us a like and a share as well on your platform of choice. Before we get into Shane and Kev's, although Kev's not here, Craig's going to go through Kev's top prospects. This past week saw the annual NFL owners meeting taking place in Florida. Craig, what's Mr. Mara been saying?
Quickly, just before we go, even lads, listen to the pod for a while, the first live show tonight. Welcome, my friend. Get involved.
Any questions, Joel?
Let us know. So let's crack on. Yeah, John Mara was up first. The annual meeting between the league's owners, general managers and head coaches, commencing with both Dable and Shane taking their place in the yearly school photos, as I'm coining it, with Brian Dable doing his best Ashley Cole impression by just hanging on at the side there.
Wasn't it last year he was like ridiculously sunburnt, and now yes. This year he's like right on the side?
Before we get into that, is it me or has Dave slimmed down a little bit? Little bit more svelte, maybe. You know, not using the off season to pig out.
No,
he's in the maybe gym, mate. Should get into him.
Maybe a bit of pressure. So that kicked off on the Sunday. Monday, however, had a bit more of a serious look as two of the three groups were available for interview. And in the case of John Mara, the meeting's pretty much the only chance Giants fans get to hear from him now. So what was said? Firstly, Mara conveyed confidence in both Dable and Shane, saying that despite last season being a huge disappointment to him, especially coming off of a playoff year, he expressed that he still believed that the Giants were heading in the right direction. But obviously, until the team starts winning again, not everyone will buy in. Regarding Dable, Mara did admit, of course, that there were times that he wishes his head coach would tone it down a little bit in reference to his perceived outbursts, but believes it's more down to him getting excitable in games. Also adding that he that Mara was in team meetings and he sees how he acts around his coaches in his office and he always maintains his cool there. And then lastly, the hottest topic that Mara was asked about was if he would support Shane and Dave's taking a quarterback. Jordan Renan reported that his response was, if they fall in love with a quarterback and believe it's worth the number six pick or moving up, I would certainly support that. But also did reiterate that he's still in Daniel Jones's corner and believe competition at quarterback would be a good thing. As a perception of being a meddling owner amongst most of the Giants fandom on X, do you feel like his comments kind of show that he has faith in Joe Shane in the upcoming draft to allow him to do what he wants as opposed to taking over Shane?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think he has all along. I mean, I know what fans say about him meddling. I don't think he meddles. I think he's probably just asked his opinion at times and he's given it or, you know, let's face facts, he's the owner. If he wants to tell Joe Shane, I think we should give DJ an extension. Joe Shane doesn't have to do it, what he says, but he's rightly going to voice his opinion, just like all of us do that talk on the podcast and all the listeners and viewers do in the comments. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion. And I'd probably say, you know, nobody's opinion matters more than anybody else's. Everyone's got that right to opinion. But the owner's probably just got that little bit more of a right to have an opinion than anybody else. So, you know, I do believe all along he's just left Joe Shane to it. But, I wouldn't be surprised if it's more Joe Shane asking John what he thinks rather than John just piping up uncalled for as to what he thinks. I mean, you know, you see the videos in the draft room when they're in the war room when on draft night and he's there, but he's never like front and center and I don't believe he's there saying to Joe, oh, Deontay Banks is there. I think we should take him. You know, he asks his opinion. You know, I believe he's been sat in on some of the meetings with QBs that we've had hosted over the last couple of weeks as well. Because he wants to see what we're potentially bringing in as the owner. Like if anyone's got anything more to lose than, you know, your GM and your head coach, it's going to be your owner. So, yeah, you know, I think there's faith for him.
Dan, what are your thoughts on John Mara?
I mean, he's got to have faith in the GM, right? Otherwise, he wouldn't be in the job, surely. I think he's got full faith in Joe Shane. Like Shane said, you know, he's not as if he's one of the sort of main cast members when it comes to draft night. He's supporting cast. He'll sit back and he'll sort of see what's going on. And obviously, they'll ask his opinion, what he thinks of all different prospects. But I think they do trust him. Remember, what we see on the outside is completely different, or, you know, say completely different. It's a snippet of what goes on the inside. What comes out in the media and what's seen in the media and heard in the media is probably 1% of all the conversations, not even 1% of all the conversations, all of these different things that go on inside, internally, in-house, that we don't get to see any of. So I know people say that John Mara meddles. At the end of the day, there are worse owners out there. Let's look at Carolina's owner, for example, in David Tepper, right? Could be worse. So I think, yeah, in all honesty, John Mara, he's going to be disappointed in last year. I don't know that anyone wouldn't be disappointed in last year, but I don't know until the proof is there that the team's sort of heading fully backwards. I can see that trust in the GM being there. But the one thing about that you said about Dable as well, about, you know, maybe you should tone it down a little bit. Why does he want to tone it down? Don't tone it down. I want to see that Dave's rage all the time on the sideline. You know, who doesn't love a good old Dave's death stare, right? So that just shows his passion for the game. That just shows his passion for the job. And he wants what's best for not just the players around him, but the team as well. So, yeah, maybe I'm not a big fan of that tone the Dave's down comment. But, yeah, I think overall, John Mara, I mean, he signed my helmets. So, you know, I like the guy. But, you know, he's definitely got trust in the GM.
So Shane, on to Shane.
Yeah, so obviously after the owner, the GM Joe Shane spoke, a fair few different topics were spoken about from Joe Shane. The first one was obviously regarding Daniel Jones, who's going to be entering year two of his $160 million. Yeah, that's right. Just to clarify, I didn't cut out $160 million contract extension that he had last year. He's recovering from a torn ACL. During his chats, Shane revealed that Daniel had progressed from running on an anti-gravity treadmill. Anybody? Anti-gravity treadmill? I mean,
I looked it up.
Now, before I walked in the gym and went, "Have you got one of them anti-gravity treadmills?" I don't think I'd get an answer, in all honesty.
I feel so what? Aren't they like sort of suspended midair and they sort of basically like run with no like weight?
Yeah, it's like it's almost like an inflatable over. Weirdly, I've got a treadmill in the background there. Maybe I should have made something, shouldn't I? But it's like
a demonstration.
Yeah. It's like an inflatable that goes over the top of it, and then I guess there's a harness in the top because he kind of just sits in it. So I'm guessing, yeah, he's like suspended, but.
So that's that's holding his whole weight, and then he's just running essentially.
Yeah, it's a new one to me anyway.
Absolutely mental. And now he's, one of the mortals. He's running on land now with the rest of us. He's gone from running on anti-gravity. Now, like us mortals, he's running on land. but he said that he expects him to be ready for the start of training camp in July. He was also asked about the status of Darren Waller, who is still contemplating retirement. You know, we've all got a lot of things on our mind, and retirement's obviously a big one for Darren. He didn't reveal if there was a deadline on the decision, but he will free up $7.3 million cap space if he does decide to retire. Dan Duggan from The Athletic did mention in his tweet about this news that 3 weeks ago, Waller had said he would make his decision pretty soon, but the Giants, surely going to be hoping that it's kind of prior to the draft, because 3 weeks later is not pretty soon, in my opinion. But maybe that's just me. And then finally, Shane was also asked about Evan Neal, saying that he will remain at right tackle and there are no plans to shift him to guard. This likely means that newly signed Jermaine Illuminor will start training camp at guard. So obviously three bits of news there about three different players who've got different things to prove this coming summer. And one of them, if he's even there this summer. What do you make about Shane's remarks about all three players, Dan?
I mean, let's start off with DJ. Yes, his contract was $160 million. What? But I'm a little bit surprised that he said he's going to be ready to go by the start of camp. I mean, I know like recovery, rehab, everything has come on leaps and bounds in the last few years. And I know recovery from an ACL tear is less than it used to be. But the fact that he's going to be potentially be ready by July, you know, when it was what week? October, wasn't it? He tore his ACL. Was it October, November, even maybe when? I can't remember whenever it was. But that's a real short turnaround for an ACL tear. So that did surprise me a little bit. But you know, if he's on track to make that comeback for camp, I mean, camp will be sort of fairly light work for him. I don't think we'll see him sort of in full drills at all throughout camp. Remains to be seen, I suppose. With Waller, I'm not surprised he's not made his mind up yet. You know, these wily veterans tend to take their time when it comes to making the decision whether they want to come back or not. I mean, he's only 31. He's heading into his 10th season with his injury problems. He'll probably leave it to the very last minute to make a decision. I'd be surprised if he comes back whenever he does make that decision. All signs seem to be pointing towards him hanging up his cleats. So I'd be very surprised if he does come back. But yeah, it'd be nice to save that big chunk of cash against the cap. And on Evan Neal, I'm not surprised that they've sort of said he's going to start a tackle. We said that last week he was always going to be given a chance to prove himself at tackle. After all, picking him number 7 is saying you believe in him to be that starter that you want to be him to want him to be. They'll no doubt reevaluate during camp. They'll reevaluate sort of as you go through the pre-season and then into the regular season as well. But Yeah, not surprised in the slightest at that.
Yeah, Jones. I mean, we've spoken about Jones probably since
Charles come home.
Yeah, every pod since he signed that contract, even when he wasn't playing, I think we were still talking about Jones. So,
here's a challenge for next week. Let's go the whole pod without talking about Daniel Jones or even mentioning his name. So on, let's do it.
So yeah, like there's not really much more I can add about Jones. You know, at the end of the day, the injury will take as long as it needs to take. You look at Wandale didn't he came back towards the end of camp, I think, and his was pretty late. So we'll wait and see. Evan Neal, again, we've spoken about Evan Neal a million times. The fact that he's going to be given an opportunity to play right tackle should be surprising to no one. At the end of the day, it's year three. Yes, he's been awful. Does he still deserve the opportunity to play in the position that he was drafted for under a brand new offensive line coach coming off of an injury hit season where maybe some fans were happier to see him injured than actually on the field? Yeah, he still deserves it. I just hope that the Giants are aware that the leash has to be short on Evan Neal, and worst comes to the worst, they need to pull the trigger and move Illuminor out there, especially if something like drafting a Penix comes into play, because that's a very dangerous situation for us to even put someone with his injury history out there. The Waller one is probably the one I want to focus on more, because I feel like Chris brought up a really good point here that I think after the draft we might get more info. Maybe he wants to know if we draft a QB. If not, he might retire. And I think that's a really good point, that there could be a potential that Waller's thinking to himself, I don't want to play with Jones again. I don't want to go through the same issues that we had last year. Maybe he's looking at maybe a rookie QB, with Jones being given the beginning of the season. And much like Jones did to Eli, it'll be a case of the rookie comes in when Jones starts to falter and they need to take a look there. But Holt also said if Waller hasn't decided his heart's clearly not in it anymore, time to retire and release that album. Bobby Skinner posted a thing saying he was willing to take on bet on Waller retiring and releasing his album on the same day. So I think that's a good one. So yeah, I think the injuries take the toll. As we spoke about, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, there were reports that Darren Waller doesn't love the game of football. And I think it's very difficult to gee yourself up for another training camp when you don't have the fire in your belly, because you don't love playing the game of football. It's, you know, it's a job to you. So I think that's the end. I just feel like he kind of has the Giants at ransom at the moment, and that's the biggest problem, is the amount of money that we're potentially not able to use, because he's got it all kind of locked down at the moment.
Yeah. Just before we move on, I'll put this out to the listeners as well, just with a yes or no, and I'll ask you two as well. So just simple yes or no. If you are Joel Shane, would you cut Darren Waller today? And the listener, and wow, what's that? I don't know why I've had balloons going up on my screen.
That's for the listeners. Good birthday, Shane.
I know, yeah. listeners just want to comment yes or no, just get your opinion as well. Would you cut Darren Waller today?
Dan, you go first, mate.
It's got to be a yes, I think.
And it's a no from me.
Really?
Ooh. Yes. I just feel like he still has something to offer. And I do kind of agree in the sense of he's waiting till after the draft to see the state of the roster. Maybe not a QB, but at least the state of it. And, you know, if we happen to take it, Roma Dunze or Malik Nabers, maybe that takes some of the heat off of Waller being that outlet for the offense, that maybe he'll be able to feast a bit more. So it's interesting. I've got one person agreeing with me, James, saying he wouldn't cut him. And then Kieran, yes. Steve, yes. Chris, yes. Joel, yes. Holty, yes. And James, the impact on the cap if he retires. So at the moment, I believe he's under contract for about 14 million. will make a $7 million saving on the cap if he retires. It's essentially the same as us cutting him at this point. He's still under contract and still is allowed to pick that up, even though he retires, apparently, which is a very strange thing for the NFL. But I suppose that's
it's all part of the CBA, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's all part of collective bargaining. But I mean, it is a tough one with Waller, because I do think he still has something to give, but I don't know whether his heart is still in it or not. You know, it's like if he really wanted to come back, he would have been like, regardless whether we've, whoever we've got a quarterback, whatever the situation is, yes, I'm coming back for another year. But you know, that's just that might be me. He might be sitting there laughing his head off, thinking all these guys think I'm going to retire. I'm going to, you know, come back at some point, and it's going to take everyone by surprise. You know,
it's
his prerogative.
Chris has said there are some hot tight ends in this draft. Ben Sinnott.
Yeah, man. Yeah, Ben's my tight end crush this draft. You tend to find that you have a player at each position that you just have a little bit of a soft spot for. And in our mock draft, because we order mock drafts that often at the minute, I think he's usually there in like the fifth round.
And don't forget, we've got a very capable tight end in Dan Bellinger. You know, he proved he was capable in his rookie year. So, you know, there's plenty more to come from that story, no doubt. Moving on, finally, with the annual meeting. Well, not finally, because there's another bit coming as well. Coach Dable had a few things to say as well. Not a lot in comparison to John Maher and Joe Shane, but he did shed a little bit of light on a few things. He was questioned about his demeanour on the sidelines and that he's a very passionate person. There's times where he wishes he'd handled things differently. But he also revealed there's a sort of self-evaluation process that he does, and he's going to continue to evolve. Again, we want to see that Dave's rage. We want to see that death stare. If a player fucks up, we want to see that death stare. We want to see that rage. He also spoke on play calling, but remained pretty tight-lipped about the plan, saying no decision has been made on if he will take over from Mike Kafka on play calling duties. You have said whatever I feel is best for the football team, that's where we'll go. Kind of expected that sort of answer. He wasn't going to reveal anything this early. We probably won't find out until week one of the regular season, really, because I mean, even through preseason, they're going to give it to Kafka, aren't they? To sort of test it out and see how it goes. And then lastly, the first time he answered questions about the new DC, Shane Bowen, he said part of the attraction was that he'd done a great job in the running game the last few years at Tennessee, in the red zone and on third down as well. So, you know, he's coming into the team with some, you know, high praise there from a head coach. So let's hope he can live up to that praise. And a lot of people also noted that Dave said a few times that Bowen was a good teammate, which some have taken as a bit of a sly dig towards Wink from last season, because was he a good teammate? Interesting. But yeah, not much given away by the coach there, which doesn't surprise me, but there are still sort of those rumblings of friction between Wink and Kafka. But do you think Kafka will take having the play calling away from him, potentially, Craig?
You know, Holtie's pretty much said, yeah, Dan Duggan says Dave was calling plays this year. I was watching the Talking Giants podcast earlier that they had Dan Duggan on, and yeah, Dan was pretty adamant, you know, that this is a case of you've been given the assistant head coach role. There's your little pay rise. This is probably what's going to happen. And you're just going to be sitting in on the meetings and, you know, learning how to be a head coach, because at the end of the season, regardless what happens, you're probably either going elsewhere to be an OC or going elsewhere to be a head coach. So, you know, Dable probably feels that he's on the hot seat and thinks that he really needs to call plays and kind of hold the destiny in his own hands. You know, at the end of the day, if he's going to go down and the ship's sinking, he's going to be the person driving the ship. So it does make sense in that sort of area, I guess. Just one other thing on that, Dan Duggan did say that he was pretty pissed off with Daves, just because of like how little he gave away, especially seeing as like, you know, after the season finished, it wasn't really a question and answer session. It was more of a kind of like, here's the state of play, see you later. And then Bowen got appointed, and then at the combine, there wasn't really a question and answer session with Daves, and now this is the first one. And they tried asking him about the past, and he went, well, you know, the past is the past, and the future's, you know, the future's way off yet. So when they were asking about, oh, is Illuminor going to be starting at tackle? He was like, well, you know, we'll get to that when we get to it. And I think a lot of the beat writers were just a bit annoyed with Daves and just how little he was giving away. And the fact that, you know, it's a 45-minute breakfast interview, essentially, that didn't really give many answers.
What do you reckon, Shane? How do you think Kafka will take it if it's taken away?
Yeah, I mean, he's not really got much choice in all honesty. Like, I think like Craig says, like Daves, no, that Daves is on the hot seat this year. It's as simple as that. You know, there's no beating around the bush. I think Joe Shane's on the hot seat a little bit. I think, you know, if we have a bad season, I think Daves is probably going to be gone, and Shane can probably ride the wave a little bit and get another opportunity, whereas Daves isn't going to get another opportunity. So, you know, I think it is a case, and Daves knows this, and I think, you know, you can tell he knows this by the answers he was giving in his interviews, that there's no messing about this coming season. You know, he's literally got to have his game head on constantly. You know, he's right. The past is the past. There's no point talking about the past. Like, it's gone, it's done. That season's gone, whatever. And, you know, I suppose he doesn't want to get saying too much. And I think he's very much kind of fully aware that he can't afford another poor season. The only thing I think could potentially save him is if they do end up drafting a QB in round one. And I think that can maybe blag it a little bit there, that look, we've drafted a quarterback, let us mold him, let me do what I can do with quarterback. You've seen what I've done with Josh Allen, you've seen what I've done with Daniel Jones that one year, you've seen what I did with Tommy DeVito. So, you know, he can sell that, you know, look, I've drafted my QB, the QB I want, let me mold him, give me another year. So and we'll talk about this loads over the coming weeks. It will be interesting what the Giants do in round one, or maybe even later on in terms of the quarterback position. But, you know, let's not make no mistakes about it. Dave is fully aware that he's on the hot seat, and I think realistically, us as a fan base kind of know he's as well. And I think if people are saying that he's not, I think you need to have another look, in all honesty.
I think they're in denial.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's sort of unanimous, is that I think Dave's will probably be the play caller come week one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't see there being any other option. Cool. Well, all right. There are some rule changes as well, Craig.
Yeah, get ready for the wall of changes, essentially. So, yeah, another part of the yearly owners' meeting involves the rules, and this year there have been a large number of changes agreed on. So let's take a quick look at them. Coaches will now be able to have a third challenge available to them if they have one successful challenge. Previously, the coaches had to win both challenges in order to get a third one. The league has expanded where they're allowed to use the use of replays to make sure that calls are correct. New additions include plays where the quarterback was down or out of bounds, or whether the play clock had expired prior to the snap. The much-discussed hip drop tackle has now been banned. This is likely to cause much confusion in season and has already had players from both sides of the ball in uproar. JJ Watt, RG3, and the Giants' own Jason Pinnock have already expressed their opinions on the ruling. The NFL have explained the rules as: a player can no longer grab a runner with both hands or wrap the runner with both arms and unweight himself by swiveling and dropping his hips and or lower body, landing and trapping the runner's legs at or below the knee. If caught performing this type of tackle, it will be a 15-yard penalty. Clear as mud, right? So you can't...
Yeah.
You can't grab them, but you also can't buckle. But also, if you land on, if you land on their legs, is that a foul? Like, if you don't land on their legs, is that okay now? Like, it's going to be a horrific. The first few weeks, we're going to see some absolutely horrendous calls on that one. And if you thought pass interference could determine a Super Bowl, you wait until Patrick Mahomes gets a free first down, trying to get a first down.
Mate, the amount of free first downs he's going to get this season.
Absolutely, absolutely. On something that is more exciting, let's put it that way. New kickoff rules that mirror what the XFL used last season. The kicker will now line up at his own 35, while the rest of the coverage team will line up along the receiving team's 40. The receiving team can have two returners inside the landing zone, which is from the 20-yard line to the goal line, while the rest of the receiving team lines up at the 35-yard line. You cannot fair catch it anymore, and neither line can move until the receiver possesses the ball. Again, very wordy. Looks exciting in concept, and I see that the Steelers have gone out and signed Cordell Patterson to a 2-year deal straight off the back of that.
Mate, we've got Gunner, mate. Come on.
Well, interesting. I've got a question for you both on that in a minute. Other rules approved also include moving the trade deadline a week to after week 9, so the Tuesday after week 9 rather than the Tuesday after week 8, just to allow for the fact that we now have 18 game weeks in a season. Unlimited player return transactions in the postseason from injury, practice squad quarterbacks being allowed to be the emergency QBs and not having to be on the 53-man roster. Non-travelling player declarations being clearer. I have no idea what that means. And finally, an extension to the preseason Hawkeye feed for coaches, which again, I guess that is something to do with the way that they're able to review plays in real time. So a lot of changes, the biggest ones being the kickoff and hip drop tackle. I'll ask you two about those in a second. First of all, does Gunner potentially have a slight issue on his hands with the new kickoff system, and maybe Isaiah McKenzie was brought in to preempt that, Shane?
I don't know. I mean, do we maybe turn around and say we keep two specialists? If you can have two back there, leave Gunner and McKenzie back there. I'd rather that than see McKenzie and Eric Gray, for instance, like, or maybe we'll do something stupid and put Deontay Banks back there. You know what I mean? Like, maybe the plan is to have two. Maybe the plan is to have two specialist returners on the roster, and you know, then you're kind of confident that either way you've got someone there that can return it.
Dan?
I mean, maybe they'll have McKenzie for kickoffs and Gunner for punts. Who knows?
It's very true.
But I mean, either way, I think we've got two pretty damn good kick returners in McKenzie and Gunner.
So yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of love for the kickoff rule and how it worked in the XFL, and it does look a lot more exciting. And you know, as Chris said there, some of the plays in the XFL were amazing. They had to do something with the kickoff, didn't they? I mean, it was just getting stale, and there was so little being returned. One of the other changes, though, was on the onside kick, which means that you have to declare it now. So you can't, there's no surprise onside kicks anymore. And I think you can also, is it something? No, I think that was the alternative rule was you can only do it in the fourth quarter. But yeah, you have to declare it. So do you think that kind of kills the onside kick?
Even more so than it already has done, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in terms of the general kick, the general kick kickoff rules, I'd rather this than lose it completely, because that's essentially the path it was going down. It was going down the path of there's going to be no kickoffs. So you're literally just going to kick the ball and no one's ever going to return it. So at least kind of this way, you know, it keeps it a little bit exciting. I mean, I know we've not done it very often. We've only done it once in the last few years, but everyone loves a kickoff being housed. 102 yards, whatever it might be. You know, there's nothing more exciting than that happening. So, you know, at least this way, we still got the potential for that to happen, and I'd rather that than it go. Declaring the onside kick, I'd I don't like that one at all. That's part of what makes it bored. It when someone does it, you're like, oh shit, they've gone for the onside kick, rather than being told by the commentator and the Giants have declared they'll be going for the onside kick. Like, oh great, thanks. Might as well turn it off. That's what it does, like.
Yeah, absolutely. So Kieran said, considering the amount of tackles we missed last season, the hip drop tackle might not actually affect us that much. And I mean, Holger said that last year there was an average of one hip drop tackle a game over the season. So obviously, maybe not the numbers that we expected. Your thoughts on that? Because obviously, the NFL PA, they've come out and said, you know, we're the ones that play the game. Why don't we have a say in stuff like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think the way I see it is it's stupid, it's shit. Like, I mean, you just look at some of the roughing the passer calls you get. You get roughing the passer calls where it's like, what's the defender meant to do? So, look, I personally think, especially week one, there's going to be flags for hip drop tackles all over the place. The defender's going to be like, look, I've got no other choice. It's either that or I just watch him run by me, and then I'm probably going to be cut tomorrow morning because I've let him run by me.
Negates the need for a defender. It's like, there you go. End zone's there, see you later. You know.
Yeah. Put a large Pepsi while showing your way to the end zone.
Yeah, I mean, if that stat's true, that there's only one per game on average over the last season, then hopefully it won't cause too much impact. But you know for well, week one, there's going to be so many flags for that being thrown, and it's going to decide games. Because it's not as if it's just a 5 yard, but it's a 15 yard personal foul, and it's a big flag. And like I said, how many are going to go in the favour of Patrick Mahomes next season? There's going to be plenty of them. The kickoff, I love it. I've seen quite a few of the plays from the XFL from last year, and I think it looks fantastic. But I don't know if it is in terms of a touchback, in terms of like just kicking it through the end zone, like, are they still allowed to do that?
Yeah, I think it's really weird, and it's going to be hard to interpret exactly what happens until we kind of get live games. I think if it goes into the end zone, it's a touchback, it's fine. I think if it lands in that, what did they call it? What was the word they called it? The landing zone. If it ends up in the landing zone and then bounces into the end zone, I think it goes forward to the 25 or the 30 or something. I don't know. The rule change was massive, so I've only taken like little bits from it. But yeah, until we see it in live action, I think it's going to be one of those ones that's going to take a few weeks until we really grasp it totally.
Yeah, there were some really sort of exciting plays that were in the XFL last year. And I think at the time they were saying, you know, the NFL needs to take a leaf out of their book and bring this kind of kickoff into the game, because like you said, it was eventually going to get to the point where a team scores a touchdown or a field goal, and then you're just going to give it to the opposition team on the 35-yard line. They're not going to have to kick off. It's just going to be a snap at the 35-yard line or the 25-yard line or whatever it is. Touchback at the 30-yard line. Thanks for that, Chris. They had to do something. And I think this, I love the fact that all of the defenders and the, well, both sides of the, you know, both teams, they're sort of lined up opposite each other, almost like mano a mano, like, come on then, try and beat me. So it looks quite cool when you watch it on video. But yeah, I like that one. But the hit drop tackle, remains to be seen, I suppose. We'll have to wait and see until week one. And then lastly, we're still going with the annual meeting. Shane?
Yeah, so the final bit in news, excuse me, is it was announced during Monday's annual meeting that the Giants have been awarded the global markets program rights for Germany. I don't know any German whatsoever, so I'm not going to be attempting to say any of this in German. The press release that was sent out said the Giants will kick off their marketing rights in Germany in April during the 2024 NFL draft. On April the 27th, which is day 3 of the NFL draft, the team will announce their draft pick live from Germany with a collection of fans and alumni. The Giants also recently announced their International Fan of the Year was a German native who was surprised with a video message from legend Eli Manning and a trip to attend the 2024 NFL draft in Detroit.
Interesting. Guten Abend, Giants in Deutschland. You're welcome. A little bit of German for you there.
GCSE German coming in handy, yeah?
Absolutely, mate. That's pretty much all I know. Yeah, that's why where you might recognise this mug from, like we said at the beginning, someone made an appearance in one of the videos. Behind a big blue Germany flag, which, you know, we're all friends with big blue Germany, but yeah, I can guarantee we'll play the Panthers in Germany, Chris. I wouldn't be surprised.
I have a thought on that. So there's actually like 10 teams that have been awarded Germany over the last 2-3 years. Now, the Panthers obviously have the game this year, but we weren't the only people to be awarded Germany this year. I think the Colts and one other team were also given Germany this year, in addition to the 7 teams who obviously have already been there. And I think there's only 2 or 3 teams that have played in Germany out of those 10. So, you know, it's a 5-year deal. So is there a possibility we play the Panthers there this year? Yes. Would I bank on it? No, not at all. You know, it's a 5-year deal, really early, doesn't come into fruition until the 1st of April. So they've got 5 full seasons to get the Giants over there. Whether they pull the trigger straight away is another question.
Yeah, I think at some point over the next 5 years, we'll see the Giants in Germany, but it could be any point in those 5 years. And it will be wunderbar.
Just looking at it, Seattle have expanded to Germany. Steelers have expanded to Germany. These are all teams that were already had some form of existing relationship going on. Patriots already had one with the Patriots, and then added to Germany was ourselves, Detroit and Indy.
Yeah, there we go.
So it's a big chunk of teams.
I mean, James, yes.
We would very much enjoy that. Yes.
We'll take solace in the fact that we have Graham Gano, Jamie Gillen and Jermaine Illuminor, who are all, you know, from our fair shores. On the team at the moment, so.
And it's the most UK players on an NFL team ever.
Oh, didn't know that.
NFL UK tweeted it out. I think it might have been yesterday. I'm just trying to find the tweet now. They tweet a lot. Hearty helping of UK players now on the Giants roster. The most UK players on an NFL roster ever.
There we go. Happy days. Giants, baby. Let's do it. International Giants obviously expanding, so it's a good time to be a Giants fan. Alrighty. Right. On we go. On we move. Before we get cracking with the top prospects, we've got a few updated mock drafts to tell you about. You'll never see that. Most UK players, you'll never see that like that. We've got a few mock drafts updates for you. Mel Kiper, Phil Yates, Jordan Reed, Bucky Brooks, Daniel Jeremiah, and Lance are the 6 sort of main ones. Phil Yates and Jordan Reed haven't changed. Mel Kiper went for Roma Dunze, and previously went with Malik Nabers. Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah have gone with Malik Nabers. And Lance Erline, I mean, he's got a thing for offensive tackles because his especially coming to the Giants as well. His previous mock draft was Fuaga out of Oregon State, and this latest one is JC Latham out of Alabama, both offensive tackles. So, yeah, all signs seem to be pointing towards receiver, but I mean, surely we don't take a tackle in round one again for the second time in 3 years, do we? Surely not.
Lance Erline's just trying to piss Shane off.
Yeah, I was just going to say,
absolutely.
I mean, he's not replied to my tweet on Twitter or X, which is annoying, Lance. And then you're knocking off defensive tackles constantly. Like, literally, you are trying to piss me off, and you're doing a very good job as well, just so you're aware.
I mean, I can't. We've got Andrew Thomas, we've got Illuminor, we've got Evan Neal from Needy. What more? We don't need another rookie. Come on, let's face it. But yeah, we'll obviously, like I said, all signs seem to be pointing towards receiver at six. Kev might not be too happy about that, as he seems to be liking the quarterback pick at six. But you know, if there are any more updated, Shane's like, no thanks. If there are obviously any more mock updates, we will bring you those as and when they come in. All right, then it's time for me to take a back seat as it's draft prospect time. With Kev not being here this week, like I said, Craig is going to go through Kev's list on his behalf. All right, then, without further ado, defensive line, those big guys up front.
So that
Craig, over to you.
Kev is Craig. So neither Dan or Shane has seen these. And as we did a few weeks ago, Shane and Kev have kept their top fives secret. So Kev won't find out Shane's top five until he watches this episode.
Can I just ask? Can you do Kev's top fives in an Irish accent, please?
No, because I don't want to be cancelled, and it will happen.
Good answer. Let's go.
Right, so here is Kev's top five at the defensive interior position. So he has gone. We'll go 5-1.
Can Dan please announce number four, please?
Yes, okay. So number
Shut
five
up, is... man. Come on.
Number five is Darius Robinson from Missouri. Dan, here is number four.
Let's see how far you German gets your name.
I'm going to go with Ruke Ororo.
You're saying like a dog or something.
Ororo. That's what it looks like. Ororo.
No, you're not far off, to be fair.
Apologies if I've absolutely murdered your name, Mr. Ruke from Clemson.
Closer than I thought you would be.
Is it Ruke Orohorohoro?
Orohoro.
Orohoro. Orohoro, your boat gently down the stream.
Orohoro. Orohoro.
Number three, Trevante Sweat. Number two, Jerzon Newton. And number one, Byron Murphy II. So, Shane, before we reveal yours, I have some context from Kev, and I'll read it straight from the message that he sent to me.
Darius Robinson could potentially be seen as an edge guy.
Yes, so that was his point. He said, some see Robinson as a defensive end, but I see him as a big defensive end in a 4-3 and an interior defensive end in a 3-4, lining up next to Sexy in nickel. That was his thought process behind the Darius Robinson bit there. So if we bring yours up here, very similar. Par
yeah.
One.
Hey, which is the same.
Number five.
I'll let you say the name again.
Arrow.
Arrow.
Does sound like Scooby-Doo. And Steve said Dan doing his best Tim Allen.
The only difference we've got is obviously I've got Chris Jenkins out of Michigan at number five. Otherwise, four down to one, kind of it exactly the same for me.
So, you let me know who do you want to focus on out of those, and I'll bring up the stats for the viewers.
I think we might as well just go with number one to begin with, Byron Murphy at Texas. You know, he's a player who I think probably up until about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I had him as DT2, and I had Johnny Newton, as he's known as, rather than Jazan. I had Johnny Newton at number one for a while, and then kind of Byron Murphy's just kind of overtaken him, and you can kind of see the reasons why it's on the screen. I mean, this year he posted a 91.1 PFF grade, 80.5 run D grade, and a 91.5 defensive grade. Put up six sacks, 45 pressures, and 22 total tackles. You know, this is for a guy 6'2", 297. He ran a 14.487 seconds with a 10-yard split of 1.69, which I believe was the third fastest out of all D tackles. You know, he's an absolute beast. The idea, yeah, Chris knows he's awesome. To be fair, I mean, I think we might have spoke about it. I think it was on air last week or off air about the idea of doing a potential trade down and picking Byron Murphy up, kind of in the 20s to partner with Dex, and that partnership would just be like, you know, salvating at the mouth at the thought of that, of Brian Burns, sexy Dexy, Byron Murphy, and then Thibodeau. You know, he'd be absolute beast. But you can kind of see stats from last year as well. He still produced. Granted, he didn't get as many many sacks. He only had the one sack, but, you know, he still put up 20 total pressures, a respectable run D grade, still above 80s, and a pass D grade of 75.4 last year as well.
So there's been one question. So before we go into any of the other sort of prospects, no Fisk.
Yeah, so honest to God, like DT4, I think I'm quite confident with Rook being at DT4, but literally DT5, I could tell you next season will all be in my top 10 at some point, which we will discuss maybe on this episode about what's coming with that or later on in future episodes. But like literally DT5 come down to me between Mekki Wingo out of LSU, Chris Jenkins from Michigan, Michael Hall out of Ohio State, Dwayne Carter out of Duke, and Braden Fisk out of Florida State. And it was literally just like a bit of a coin toss. And the reason I went for Chris Jenkins is just because he's an absolute athletic freak. You know, if you look at his stats when he was at Michigan last year, 82.7 grade. Again, respectable run D grade at 82.3, 70.5 pass defensive grade, putting up 2 sacks, 20 total pressures and 36 total tackles in 15 games. He had a good combine, ran a 4.91. He's 6'3", 299 pounds. So, you know, only a little, he's a little bit heavier than Byron Murphy is, but a little bit slower as well. 10-yard split of 1.17. He, you know, he put up 29 on the bench press, which was the second best of any defensive lineman at the combine as well. So, you know, he's an athletic monster, to be fair. He's a little bit raw. You know, projections there is top 50. He's definitely a day two kind of guy. But like I say, in all honesty, like my DT5, much like my wide receiver 5 a couple of weeks ago, I probably could have picked about 5 or 6 different guys to slot in at that 5 spot. And it just comes down to just the player that I like the most. And, you know, that was Chris Jenkins.
Let's go with Rook then. Talk to us about Rook.
Yeah, again, you know, he's another one who is definitely a day two pick. I think he's probably going to be someone who's kind of draft capital has probably risen over the last few weeks, to be honest, and he'll probably rise a little bit as we go going towards the draft. You know, again, he's another one who's kind of rapid, really. 6'4", 294, ran 4.89. He actually put up the quickest 10-yard split of any defensive lineman at the combine with a 1.67. And, you know, he had 12 games this year, 5 sacks, 4 hits, 17 hurries. He had 1 pass batted down. Needs to develop a little bit more as a pass rusher. Obviously, putting up a 66.9. It's not horrendous, but, you know, that's probably the one area where he kind of needs to improve when he's drafted into the NFL. But, you know, in 11% pass rush win rate, which isn't too shabby. 82.3 run D grade. So, you know, he's... sorry, that's Chris Jenkins' stats I was looking at there. Yes, 8.7% pass rush win rate and a 78.6 run D grade. So, you know, he's someone who is going to be a day two pick along with Chris Jenkins. And I think a lot of D tackles are going to be selected on day two. You know, guys that I've mentioned that haven't made the top 5.
And then, I guess, lastly on defensive interior rankings here, Byron Murphy, Texas, Trevonte Sweat, Texas. 2 Texas players in the top 3 for both of you. Different kinds of beast or kind of very similar?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just give you 2 stats on him. So Byron Murphy's 6'2", 297. Trevonte Sweat is 6'4", 366.
He's a big boy. You can see it there in that picture. Yeah. I mean, holy crap.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he's
prototypical nose tackle, isn't he?
yeah, he's probably not going to be looking much of a fit for us because of, you know, we've got XD. But, you know, he ran slow at 5.27, but he's fucking 366 pounds. I mean, you know, I'll probably run a 5.27 and I'm not 366 pounds, you know what I mean? But, you know, he had 2 sacks last year, 3 hits, 26 hurries. He had 6 passes batted down, which was the most in the draft. And, I mean, you throw in the fact that he's 3.66 and then he's a run D grade was a 92.0. He's just your proper, like Dan says, prototypical nose tackle. I think he's going to be a monster in the NFL, to be honest with you. I'll just be interested to see who ends up drafting him, where he goes and how they utilise him.
Nice.
Dan, any questions from you?
With my friend that I'm not going to murder his name again, obviously being out of Clemson, another, you know, Giants interior defensive lineman, probably one of the best players on the team, ex-Clemson, you know. Maybe that little partnership, Clemson partnership there, maybe? One big man leaving the other? I think...
You could learn a lot from him as well, to be fair. Like, I mean, Rookie's a little bit... Not undersized, he's a little bit lighter, 6'4", 294. So he probably would go well alongside Dex, because obviously Dex is that big body, nose tackle kind of guy. But, you know, the one thing that Root kind of struggles with and needs to develop on is his pass rush. And for a big guy, Dex has got damn good pass rush. So he could learn a lot from him, to be honest.
Exactly. There we go. Nothing else from me. Not on that one.
So I guess we'll move on to Edge. Shane's is up first. So Shane, you can walk us through your top five there, my friend.
Yeah, so at five, I've gone for Chris Braswell out of Alabama. Four, I've gone for Chop Robinson from Penn State. Three, go on, Dan. Let's hear the pronunciation for number three.
Why are you doing this to me, man? I mean, that one, it looks easier. Laiatu Latu.
Yeah, spot on. Latu. Two, Dallas Turner, Alabama. We need to make this a feature, actually. Every week.
Please do. Gladly.
Number two, I've had Dallas Turner out of Alabama. And then at number one, Craig can be happy now. He can smile. I finally put a Florida State guy, not just in my top five, but in at number one. And that's Jared Verse.
So just before I reveal Kev's, I just want to sort of say something about Jared Verse. It was week one of the college football season 2 years ago, I want to say, 2022. I was in a hotel room in Disney World and LSU versus...
Where's this going?
careful. And we were watching LSU versus FSU. And this was the time when I think we were talking about me getting a team and I was pretty much set on LSU. And I remember watching the game. Jared Verse was absolutely monstrous. He was everywhere. I think he had 2 or 3 sacks. He blew up so like multiple plays. And that was kind of the turning point for me actually choosing Florida State. So to see Verse now come out into the pro, I'm really interested to see where he goes. You know, from a personal level, I don't think he comes to the Giants at all. I kind of wanted him to go to the Saints because of Anna, but the Saints are taking an offensive tackle. There's, you know, it might be one of the easiest picks to predict in the entire draft that they will take an offensive tackle because Ramczyk is screwed. And was it Penning? You didn't like Penning, did you, Shane?
I wasn't a massive fan of his.
Yeah, he's done nothing. So I'm a little bit disappointed, but I am interested to see where Jared Verse goes. So Kev has got two differences to yours. One, Shane's doing research as we speak. So Kev's gone two different to yours, Shane. Five is a different player, and then two players are switched. Any ideas where he might have gone?
Bear with me, I'm just having technical difficulties with music being played on websites I'm on. So I'd imagine he's gone for Jalen Trice at 5 out of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Braylon. And the switch. Is it just two players, like, say, maybe Lotto at two and Turner at three, or is it like a Lotto at one and Verse at three?
No, they're next to each other. They are next to each other. So you saying a swap of two and three?
Dan, I reckon one and two. I reckon Turner at one, Verse at two.
Look at that. So he absolutely nailed it. Braylon tricep time.
Oh, look at this.
It's like you guys talk about this stuff, right?
Not to each other, don't leave me. Craig's like, who you got in your top five? I'm like, good, why? Stop copying me. It's my own work.
So Braylon Trice at five, Chop Roddington again at four, Liatu Latu at three, Jared Verse at two, and Dallas Turner is his number one. So I guess we might as well start with the top two. We'll start with Jared Verse just because he's top in the list of graphics that I've got here. So take us through your thoughts on Jared Verse, who obviously is your number one, Kev's number two.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, the top three I interchanged so many times. And the reason I went with Jared Verse at number one, it come down to something that I've mentioned a few times when we've spoke on air, and it was just the eye test. I had Jared Verse number one throughout the college season. You know, that's not knocking the other two guys. I think they're absolutely great edge rushers. And like I say, all three can make an argument for being edge one in this draft and in most people's rankings. But for me, it was just the fact that I was high on Jared Verse going into the season. He had a great season anyway. And it just come down to trusting what I've seen on the tape and the eye test for me. You know, Dallas Turner's going to be a complete stud. And if I had to have a bet, I'd probably say maybe right now Dallas Turner is going to be the first defensive end or the first edge player drafted on draft night. And, you know, he's come from a good program, Alabama. He's absolute monster. Sorry, I was getting my stats up. I mean, you know, look at it, the combine. He ran a 4.46, a 10-yard split. He's absolute monster, Dallas Turner is. But Jared Verse is just as good. A little bit slow with a 4.58, 40-yard dash and a 1.6 vert. But, you know, he did put up 31 on the bench press. So he's a very physical guy. Look at his stats from last year, 83 PFF grade. Run D, 65.3. So there's some room for improvement there, like kind of in terms of setting the edge potentially on the running plays. But, you know, a 90.5 pass defensive grade with 11 sacks, 60 pressures, one forced fumble. Just having a look at what other stats I might have on my screen. 14 QB hits, 35 hurries, two passes batted down. You know, for me, he's my number one, but if some, like, I can understand why Kev's got Dallas Turner at number one. Likewise, if someone said, I've got Latu at number one, I'd be like, yeah, I'll get that. I completely understand that as well.
So Latu's issue is does that come down to the injuries?
It does for me, yeah. You know, if he hadn't had the injury issues that he's had, he probably would have been number one for me. I mean, you know, absolute beast. For people that don't know, he was at Washington and then got medically retired, transferred to UCLA, who then cleared him medically. And, you know, he's had a really good couple of seasons. I mean, his PFF grade, 96.4 last year, an 81.9 run D grade, a 94.4 pass D grade, 12 games played, 15 sacks, 11 hurries, 11 QB hits, 38 QB hurries, pass rush win rate of 24.6%, which is absolutely insane. And, you know, even last year, you know, he put up a good run D grade, and you can kind of see that he improved his run defense compared to what he did last year. But, you know, it just comes down to the medical issues. And, you know, hopefully for him, he went to the combine. I'll find it what he was medically retired for, because I've got it in my notes here. But yeah, that's the only reason why he's not at one for me.
So if you have a quick look at those notes and find out. So once Shane's revealed that, we'll let him put the Penn State hat on and talk about Pork Chop, or Chop Robinson, as he's now known, because he doesn't want to be called pork chop as an adult, which is
wasn't that a cartoon character?
Pork chop. I think it was. There was something that I saw about Chop Robinson. He was called Pork Chop by his mum from a young age because he was born at 14 pounds. 14 pounds.
Good God.
Yeah. So that is why he was called Pork Chop.
I mean, I dread to think what that birth was like.
Right, over to Shane.
Yeah. Yeah, so in terms of Latu, he didn't play in 2020 or 2021 due to a neck injury. The UW doctors would not clear him and said they had to medically retire him as a result of the neck injury, saying it would be too dangerous for him to continue playing football. He then retired in 2021 and remained at Washington. And then he entered the transfer portal and went to UCLA, where he was cleared to play by their team doctors.
So, the £14 baby, Chop Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, Chop Robinson, he should be in the first round, in all honesty. Whether he could potentially drop out, but I think that'd be a travesty, to be honest with you. I mean, you look at his stats, he put up a 90.8 PFF grade this past year. In 2022, he put in a 90.6. And, you know, if you just look at his stats this year, he played 10 games, had 3 sacks, 5 QB hits and 18 hurries, which doesn't seem like a lot, but he had a 92.3 pass rush grade, which equated to a 20.9% pass rush win rate, which was the second best of any edge guys in this draft class. You know, but again, a little bit like Craig, I was kind of hoping maybe the Giants might nab him in round 2 blocks. I think he's probably going to be taken in round 1. And I think, what was his name now, Craig? Because I remember when you you fell foul of what his actual name was, didn't it? Demian or summit?
Chops.
Yeah, his official name, because you fell foul. I think it's Dominion or something like that. I don't know the pronunciation. Yes. But yeah, I think you fell foul thinking, who's this guy that I've missed in all my...
It was. I was looking at him, I was like, God, this guy's got absolutely insane stats. How is he not being talked about?
Demian Robinson?
Say again?
Demian Robinson?
Yeah, that's his actual name. But yeah, you know, I think Chop Robinson is a really, really good player. I think in all honesty, he's probably going to be most people's edge 4. He's not quite as good as the top 3 are all interchangeable. But I'd say for me, there's kind of your top 3, then you've got Chop Robinson. And then again, I feel like I keep saying this, your edge 5 is just what your flavour is. You know, everyone's going to have a different edge 5 because there's that many different ones you could potentially have. For me, Braylon Choice was in it until last week, and then I decided just to make the decision, gut instinct, what I'd seen on tape of Chris Braswell. I think he's an edge guy who's really been kind of underlooked, in all honesty. So I'll put Chris Braswell in at edge 5 for me, and his stats are there on the screen. You know, 80.9 PFF grade. Like most of these guys, not the greatest run defensive grade, with 67.2, but he did have an 87.8 pass defensive grade. His stats here, 14 games, he had 13 sacks, 10 quarterback hits, 33 hurries, 18.2% pass rush win rate. So he's not been in the 20s of the last couple of players I've spoke about, but, you know, being in that mid to late teens at 18.2% is still very good as well. And he had 3 forced fumbles as well. So for me, I think Braswell, I've just put Braswell there on potential and the fact that I think he's been underlooked. But, you know, Braylon Choice was also... He was in there right until the very end. You know, he's a really good player out of Washington. He had 15 games this year, 6 sacks, 17 hits, 53 hurries, 1 pass batted, 88.9 pass defensive grade with a 16.2% pass rush win rate. So that's just dropping down a little bit compared to the previous guys I mentioned. 0 forced fumbles, but you know, I can understand why Kev's got him at 5. He was there for me up until the very end, in all honesty.
So there have been a couple of questions, I think. So let me just find those. Obviously, not something that we're going into today. And I can't remember if he was in your top five a couple of weeks ago. Tyler Guyton.
Tyler Guyton. So I'm trying to look if he was in my top five. No, he wasn't. I'm just wondering if I've got him. Yeah, I've got him as a tackle because I know that, you know, he could potentially sort of look at playing guard potentially. I think I've seen him. I've seen him tear it out. But yeah, I do like Tyler Guyton, and he's kind of one of those players that for me, he's on that bubble of maybe going late round one, early round two. He's a pure right tackle. So, you know, if any teams out there are potentially needing a right tackle particularly and don't want to draft a left tackle to play a right tackle, you know, I'd have no issues with Tyler Guyton. And in all honesty, I would probably have him at right tackle three. I'd probably have Fuaga and Amarius Mims above him. But purely as a right tackle, he would be right tackle three for me. You know, he's an absolute beast of a guy as well. 6'7", 327 pounds. Absolute monster of a guy. You're going to be a mauler, but definitely just a sole right tackle for me.
Cool. Thanks for that, Chris. And also thank you for the comments on the graphics. They take a fair bit of work to do, but they're definitely, definitely worth it. Dan, you can take this one first and then Shane, and then I'll take this one. So Holtie's asked, I have a two-part question if you guys have time. Who do you think we take at six and who do you want us to take at six? I'll leave that one up on screen so we remember.
Who do we take? Depends who's available. In all honesty. I mean, I've got the bald head to go with it. Who do I want us to take a six? It is between those two receivers, Neighbours and Roma Dante. I think if either of them are there, I think it comes down to who they prefer. I think at the moment, everyone seems to sort of be trending Malik Neighbours a little bit more than Roma Dante, but it's a toss-up, really, isn't it, between the two?
Shane?
Yeah, I mean, I'd absolutely love Malik Neighbours. I've been on record saying that if we draft Malik Neighbours, I will purchase his jersey off the back of drafting him. I think he's going to be an absolute stud. When he had his unofficial pro day today, I think, was it a 4.35 he ran?
4.35 unofficial, yeah.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about his RAS, his relative athletic score. I think, was it a 9.89 or something that I said he'd come in at?
9.88, I think it was.
It was ridiculously high, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he put up a ridiculous vert, a ridiculous broad jump. His 40 time was absolutely spot on. And four threes is what you were kind of hoping to get from him. That's exactly what you got. And his 20 and his 10-yard split were absolutely mental as well. I think he got a rating of like 9.99 for his 10-yard split. I absolutely love Malik Neighbours, to be honest with you. I wouldn't hate Roma Dunze. They're definitely two different types of players, in all honesty. I think we could... We would benefit more from what Neighbours can bring to the team than what a Dunze can. But I'd be happy with either of them, in all honesty. What do I think we do? I think we'd probably take a wide receiver. I think it's going to cost too much to move up to second QB. There's going to be no QBs worth taking at number six. So that's where I'm at with what the Giants may be doing.
Unless Drake May falls.
You never know.
I've got to agree. After watching a little bit on both of them, I kind of want a Dunze more. I feel like Neighbours is a game breaker, like has that game breaking ability. But I don't know if maybe a Dunze is just maybe slightly more consistent. But a lot of people said that Dunze benefited from Penix, whereas, you know, on some of the tape, Neighbours was maybe hindered slightly by some underthrown balls from Jaden Daniels. So,
you know, he'll fit with Daniel Jones then.
All right, so Neighbours is nailed on. So yeah, we had another couple of questions come in, actually. So a little bit off topic. Yeah. Do you think the Giants try and sign any of the IPP kickers? I wouldn't be against it. I got a feeling that I can't remember his name, the guy who hit the 60-yarder. He visited with the Saints today. I get the feeling they probably sign him. Gano is kind of locked down, isn't he? So I don't think we'll do anything this year. Be nice from a podcast perspective, and you know, from being in the UK and Ireland. But
replace one British guy with another.
We have the Scot, you know, Illuminal, the Englishman, the Scotsman in Gillen, and then an Irishman at kicker.
Just opens the door for Lurie Zammit, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He's the Welshman.
And then Shane, just your opinion on this one. Draft a wide receiver at 6, get Rattler, punt on the season, and then draft a vet next year in Dak Prescott. Are you in or out?
I'd be in, depending on what the quarterbacks look like in the draft next year and where we're drafting. Is Dak an upgrade over Daniel Jones? He is. I'm sorry, but he is.
He is.
I think Dak's quite underrated. You know, I don't think he's as good as what the Cowboys fans make out he is. But I don't mind Dak Prescott.
Do you think Dak kind of benefits from his supporting cast? CD Lamb, Gallup.
But we'll have Malik Nabers.
Big time.
Playing in Wandale Robinson.
He's a better
regular season quarterback, yes. But how many playoff games has he won?
How many playoff games has Daniel Jones won? And we're ready to get rid of him.
I mean, he's got one.
And that's not good enough. We still want to get rid of him. So I like that, to be honest with you. And I've got to be honest with you. Some of the stuff he does off the field looks there's been a few things where like he's met like kids that have got disabilities and that, and he seems like a proper, genuine, down to earth guy. Like, considering he plays for the Cowboys, who are like very arrogant and big headed, he looks like the complete he doesn't seem like a Dallas Cowboy when you see his stuff that he does off the field. Like, he seems like a proper, genuine, down to earth guy.
I just don't ever want to see Dak Prescott pull on a Giants jersey. Thanks very much. That's my opinion. Can't stand the guy. I think off the field, yeah, fair enough. He does a lot for the community, but I think he's overrated, in all honesty. I do have a question for you, Shane, about D-line edge. So going into day 3, any potential prospects that we should be keeping our eyes out for?
Like
a deep dive.
I'm having to dive deep into my draft guide here for day 3. I mean, in all honesty, I don't know what you guys kind of think, but I hope. I'd like us to draft a defensive tackle at some point, but then you think, well, we drafted Jordan Riley last year. We drafted what's his name the year before? He did his ACL at Spurs.
DJ Davidson.
DJ Davidson.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, Jordan Riley showed flashes at times last year. I'd say DJ Davidson's probably going to be a better, not replacement, but, like, you know, if you want to take Dex out to take a breather for a play or two, Davidson will go in. But it depends on what Shane Bowen kind of wants to set up like. I mean, if I just look at some my stats here on players that kind of stand out, I mean, and I will mention, apparently the Giants did work out Ed Rusher, Mohamed Kamara at the Colorado State Pro Day. This was per Troy Pauline of Sport Keeda. Apparently Kamara stood on most of his numbers from his outstanding combine workout, where he ran the short shuttle in 4.45 seconds and the 3 cone in 7.34 seconds. And apparently he was then put through a bunch of pass rushing drills by the New York Giants, and he looked pretty good. The rumour is that the Giants like Kamara, who they view as a potential backup stroke rotational pass rusher in their system. So that might be one player to kind of keep an eye out for. Mohamed Kamara out of Colorado State, I think I said it was. But kind of in terms of D-line, I mean, they three guys. I mean, I do kind of quite like Jordan Jefferson out of LSU. 6'3", 313 pounds, so he'd probably kind of do well next to Dex. He's not going to be a replacement for him. He had 13 games this year with 3 sacks, no hits, 4 QB hurries and 1 pass batted down. Run D grade of 72.4, which we know is obviously an area that the Giants have kind of really struggled in. And if you want to focus on that, another one to watch out for might be Marcus Harrison out of Auburn, 286, but he did put up an 87.4 run D grade on the season. So these are the kind of players that I'd be looking for, players that can stop the run, because we signed all these players last year to stop the run, and guess what? We didn't stop the run. So you'd think that's where the team have identified as a potential weakness.
Nice. Thanks for that. I've got some players to look out for. And, you know, there's definitely some names to keep your eye out for as well, listeners. Even though our defensive line is looking pretty solid, you can't ever rule it out, and there's always room for improvement. There's always some young, exciting players to bring in. Now, as we are only 29 short little days away from round one of the NFL draft, we thought it was time that we reveal what our plans are for the big night at the end of April. Following on from our successful draft night party we had 2 years ago, we had a year off last year because Craig, you were away in Thailand.
I was in Japan.
Japan. One of the two. I knew it was one of the two. We thought this year,
watching the Giants draft from the bullet train.
At what time in the morning? Was it 10 a.m. or something?
Yeah, it was 10 a.m.
That'd be weird. That'd be really weird. But yeah, following on from our successful party, gathering we had a couple of years ago, we thought this year, like, how can we turn it up a notch? Well, we are pretty excited to announce that all four of us will be in Kev's little war room on the 25th of April, and that for the very first time in Big Blue UK and Ireland history, we'll be coming to you live on draft night, streaming from midnight onwards all the way through to the end of the first round, in what will be, what is gearing up to be, a draft night extravaganza. And it's not just the first time we're going to be streaming live from on the draft. It's going to be the first time all four of us are in the same room together, and actually streaming live with each other. So we're really, really looking forward to that. It's going to shape up to be a pretty big night. Craig, what else can the viewers expect from us on that night?
Yep. So we are going to run a charity raffle in advance. It will be for Andy's Man Club. So we'll be raising money for Andy's Man Club. All you'll have to do, and details will follow, but all you'll have to do is donate to our fundraiser, and you'll be entered in to a raffle to win a gaming chair that has been given to us by our friends at Trust. And as part of that raffle, we will also give you a free digital download draft Bible that we are working our fingers off at the moment to get ready. So everybody has the ability to have at their fingertips all the stats and information for every single prospect that was at the combine. There will also be other giveaways on the night as well for multiple different things. We have a salute to service scarf that we got from our trip to the Patriots game earlier last season. We will have a couple of T-shirts to give away. We have 2 £25 vouchers from our friends at USA Sports to give away. So definitely worth checking in with us on the night. And yeah, we'll announce details of the raffle as soon as we have more information.
I'm just going to very quickly hijack producing duties, producer Craig. James has asked, do I book half a day off work to stay up for the draft? And Chris has answered it absolutely perfectly, saying definitely, James. Yes. I can confirm I'm on tomorrow long weekend off, so I've got the Friday off, but I have booked the Thursday off to be able to travel there and to meet up with the lads. So you're not going to be the only one who's booking time off work. I know I've done it. Don't know if any of the other guys have. Craig has, Dan has.
Yeah.
And what if, but you know, you, and Joel said as well, do it, James. I already have. And James,
peer pressure.
Oh, go on then. Pulled your arm. That was a hard decision to make, wasn't it, James?
And then you've got opportunities you really to win yourself some prizes, James, as well.
Exactly.
Now, just one thing to add with the gaming chair. The gaming chair is open to people in the UK and Ireland only, the same with the £25 vouchers for USA Sports. However, any of the podcast merchandise and the Salute to Service scarf will be open to anyone worldwide. I don't know if I'm going to regret that, but worldwide.
shipping costs.
Oh, it's only a scarf.
I tell you what we will do as well. We'll come up with some other stuff as well to give away. So some I'll do, I'll put in for this is we'll give away a copy of Madden for the upcoming year. I'll buy that game outright and send it to somebody. It'll be Madden 25.
Madden 25.
Yeah. So it's not out till August, but I'll do it myself. I'll buy it and then we'll post it out on release day.
So Chris, this isn't a meetup per se. It'll be a live stream much like this, but we'll have a nice little table in front of us and it'll be focused on us. So feel free to obviously just have it on a laptop or on a mobile device or something like that, and obviously watch the draft itself on the big screen and just kind of listen along and get what our thoughts are. But there will be meetups. Steve's never happy, is he? He's never happy. Day two or three plans.
Steve? Yeah. I can answer this question. Day three, Sheffield Wednesday away, Steve. You should know that, mate. Come on.
Shocking that he didn't know that. I mean, I'm sure he did.
And in terms of live meetups, I mean, I don't know, like... Oh. Maybe 2025, we may have a meetup in Green Bay, potentially.
Say what? But no, we're mega excited to, like I said, not just be live streaming on the night, but all actually be together as a group for the first time ever streaming live. So we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be a huge night for us. We hope it's an enjoyable night for the viewers out there that want to tune in and watch along with us. And please do tune in and watch along with us because, you know, we do all this for those that watch and listen to this podcast. So it's going to be a cracking night. Live draft will be amazing. I mean, don't tempt me.
I don't know if I'm meant to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway, and hopefully producer Craig at least doesn't have a go at me. But you're not just going to be seeing us four on draft night. That's all I'll say.
And on that bombshell, that's all we've got time for this week, Giants fans. We will be back next Tuesday at the usual time of 8:30 as we round out the top prospects on defense, looking at linebackers, corners, and safeties. Make sure you join us then. We might even throw in a few more sprinkles to the draft night extravaganza that it's shaping up to be. So looking forward to getting back on next week. Anything else to add before we go, guys?
No, just, you know, it's been really good chatting, kind of talking about the defensive guys now. Like I said earlier on, the draft content's only just going to ramp up from here. We've got safeties, linebackers, cornerbacks to come. That's without even mentioning the mock drafts that we're going to be doing. If you were listening to us about 12 months ago, you've already got a bit of an idea as to how our mock drafts tend to work and what we've kind of got planned. It's going to be very similar to that. You know, we're doing mock drafts 2-3 times a day each, randomly posting them in. We've done mock drafts where the Giants trade up, trade down, and stay where they are. So you know, if you guys listening, watching, do any mock drafts, feel free to tweet them out to us, and we'll get retweeting and let other people see what you want to do, and you know, get mock drafts sent in to us, because the content for mock drafts will be ramping up over the next few weeks.
Yep, feels nice to have the draft plans out there. All we've got to do now is work on that draft Bible and get it finished, because it's only like 300 prospects. But yeah, we've got a framework. It's looking really good, and I can't wait for you guys to have it. And yeah, 1 month to go.
Yeah, 1 month to go. It's the final countdown. We're, you know, very, very close to it. There's lots of work to do before we get there, like you said, but we're mega looking forward to it, and we can't wait. You know, like you said about posting mock drafts out there, there's a challenge. The most outrageous mock draft you can produce, tag us in it, and obviously we'll have a look at it, and maybe have a few laughs and bring it up on the pod at some point. But yeah, a really outrageous mock draft would be quite funny and interesting, I think.
Just for context, Kev did a mock draft today, just purely not Jedi players. Oh, you more outrageous than that.
yeah. Shane and Kev will be the judge. There may be a prize for the winner. Just putting that out there, maybe. As usual, you know, it's great to be back. I'm, you know, second week in a row I've been back since my extended breakaway, and you know, it's a joy and a pleasure to bring this to you every week, viewers and listeners. So we look forward to next week, and we look forward to the end of next month as well. As I said at the top of the show, you can check out all of our social platforms and our merch store by following the link in the description. Give this episode a like and share on your platform of choice. As ever, my thanks go to Shane and to producer Craig for joining me, to you, the viewers and listeners, for tuning in. What was that? Team on three. One, two, three. Team! We are signing off. Until next time, let's go Giants.